The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
I'd like to welcome Mr. Rondell Fields to the studio of Freedom 106.5 FM. You made it.
Yes, you finally made it. Thanks for having me, man. Boy, what a morning.
I tell you. We wouldn't go into detail, but you are here.
Thank God.
You are here. So, talking from the points that you've listed so far in your article, you're saying that your Single Fathers Association of Trinidad and Tobago is not politically affiliated. Right. However, that you have key concerns that you would like to see addressed within the political space. Can you name some of them immediately?
In priority, I guess. Most definitely. And I mean, it's not just that we're just making a political call. We actually were to have a review of the Joint Select Committee hearing that we had in 2018. Parliament actually called us for a review. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be on the 14th of March. They postponed it to the 28th of March. But now, as the election has called, Parliament is dissolved. So we're not going to get that opportunity to be able to have that review, to see if some of the things, a lot of these suggestions I made there, is not suggestions that are just made by Rondell Fields and the Single Fathers Association. Mm. These are suggestions that even the Joint Select Committee at our hearing in 2018 endorsed, mm-hmm. and asked to see ministries, asked to see certain authorities put in place. You understand? And as you would see at the top of the list, when we're talking about, we've extended it not only to represent fathers. I mean, mm-hmm. this has cut, because we've represented fathers, and I think I've done a good job at that, we've been forced into the sphere over the years to represent men and even boys, because boys grow into men. Mm-hmm. So we can't take this opportunity only to champion the needs or the issues that fathers have. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, fatherhood is a subset of manhood, mm-hmm. so to speak. And we need to talk about things like paternity leave. If we are to deal with the father aspect first, why at this day and age isn't there legislation for substantial paternity leave?
I've never understood that. That is a, you give moms maternity leave, and even right. that is, from our perspective, is be a stress sometimes to even get.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
In terms of the father's side, being inside of the hospital room must seem to be
correct.
An issue as well. I never understood that.
Correct. And then you tell fathers, step up. So mm-hmm. I always say, if you don't put within your systemic realm, or you don't put within your legislative works, a step for fatherhood, for mm-hmm. fathers to step on, then it's very hypocritical for you to tell them to step up. Mm-hmm. We're talking about even births. I remember some years ago when we actually got a Minister of Health to allow fathers on the ward to see the birth of their children. At that point in time, the Nursing Association kicked up a storm. They said men will go there and look at the private parts of other women. And
if it is that you're entering the room with your wife, your girlfriend,
correct.
I don't want to go far and call the world, right? You already know what it looks like.
Correct.
And it's with this particular person, it's not going to be that you're on the whole ward. Correct.
And Tosca, I have spoken to mountains or myriads of women who support having the man there to support them, mm-hmm. who support, one of the biggest supporters of paternity leaves are mothers, mm-hmm. married mothers, mothers who, or common law mothers, where the man is in the house with them more so than anything else. Mothers are the greatest support, particularly those mothers who had C-section, particularly those mothers who had postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. Look at those, and you see, have they listened to the recommendation of the Joint Select Committee, which was in support of issuing substantial paternity leave? That issue, when those 11 babies died, those fathers would have been able to have the time to support their wives and other family members and have substantial support time for them to even grieve.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about, there's policy notes in a number of places where the man gets 2 to 3 days paternity leave.
That is unbelievable.
It's insane.
We want to get further into the particulars as it stands right now and how you'd want to change it. Let's take a short break and we'll be right back.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
All right, TNT. So, yeah, today's that kind of day, but we're here still. Welcome back to Freedom 106.5 FM. And in studio with me is the president of the Single Fathers Association of Trinidad and Tobago, Mr. Rondell Fields, and brought up a very key point before the break as it pertains to the unfortunate incident where 11 babies that passed, and then the bereavement of both mother and father.
Correct.
And the father having only
2 to 3 days.
2 to 3 days to process.
Correct.
That madness.
Correct.
And then have to go back out to
that 2 to 3 days is expired before the baby is even buried. So I'm pretty sure, and some of them lamented the fact that they had to get their bereavement leave. When that ran out, they have to then look at their vacation leave. Then that ran out. Is no pay leave.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So then we always talk about equity. Well, they say equality. I like to use equity because I believe not all that is equal is fair.
Mm-hmm.
Equitable is justice and fairness to me. So we love to talk, or we should be talking about equity, yet we don't see the participation of the father in the child's life, the need for it so to be. Imagine, now daddy might be able to mask it better, but can you imagine a man just losing a child 2 to 3 days, now bury the child, go through the headache of doing all that. He was there with mommy, listening to the songs, going to the ultrasounds, touching the belly, come and feel it when it kick. And then that done in the blink of an eye. And then he had to go back to work. And while he on work, everybody asking him, boy, and telling him, boy, sorry, boy. We're sorry for your condolences, boy. And making it even more mentally stressful on him. And as a man, he tells himself, be strong, be strong, be strong. I had to be strong for my wife and my children because they're grieving too. That you're surprised we have so much men depressed and killing themselves in the numbers that they are.
And you did mention that the rate of male suicide has increased over the years.
Of course.
And this is because of a lack of attention towards mental health as it pertains to men.
Correct.
And the services that are available. What are some of the spaces that have been available as limited resources as they are? Can you name some of them?
So definitely the state will talk about some of the psychiatric spaces that they have for mental health. But a lot of the challenges are, when you are developing these places, if you don't do the research, if you don't know the data, if you don't understand the mind of the man, most times you won't get men to go there. There are many associations in the police service, the fire service, and all these places. Men will come to us before they go to them because they will speak where they believe they will be heard or where they will feel most comfortable to speak.
Or their language understood.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So when you're designing a place like that, first of all, you don't want to call it a psychiatric clinic because you should understand the nuances around maleness. If you did, you would call it something else.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So those are some of the things that we need to do. That is the type of research that we need to do so that we could come up with the strategies. If we now are to jump in from father into the aspect of male and male suicide, that is some of the things we need to look at.
Mm-hmm.
You need to look at some of the causes as into why men take their lives. Number one is financial challenge. A man's mind operates in a way, and we've read the research from places like Canada and these places, India, which are who actually did research, we don't have any locally, that there are men that believe that to take their life, unfortunately, in a financial predicament is a logical decision.
Mm-hmm.
Or another one that where you see them making these hard decisions is when they're suffering from terminal illness. So they believe instead of suffering or not being able to perform the duty they could before, is it more logical to them to end their life, right? And that is why in one of the studies we were looking at, they were actually saying and advising doctors from stop giving people a length of time to live if they're suffering from terminal illnesses, particularly men. Stop telling them you have 6 months again. Stop telling them you have a year again. So if we take the time to do the research, if we take the time to come up with the strategies, we may save lives. There's so many people that have gone into remission from cancer, stage 2 cancer, prostate cancer. We have so many survival stories that some men, instead of taking their lives, had they heard that, had they been empowered in that perspective, they wouldn't have taken their life. We had a young man just the other day that took his life because he had stomach cancer. He wrote out what he left here, what he left for everybody, this one. So
the perspective of not being a burden to other family members.
He didn't want anybody to take care of him, anybody to suffer. He already, who will get what, who should do what. He mapped out, and he had a young daughter. So it goes to show that some of them think it's a logical decision that they're taking, and it's not a decision of weakness, or it's not. We see the reason why we are more concerned about murder than suicide is because we see it's an act that the person is committing against themselves. Like somebody commits a murder, mm-hmm. so you think that the person is committing an act against themselves. We don't realize it is an internal battle that the person has lost, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That is why, to me, it is an epidemic. It is a sickness. It is a disease. It is a mental disease.
The thing is, from understanding how mental health has been pushed at the forefront for the past couple of years, and understanding the type of narrative and right. talk that is surrounded both for male and female, right. you could understand why a lot of people are not even willing to seek out the help, because mm-hmm. the stigma
Correct.
That goes with it, especially when it comes to the provider of the house.
Correct. And let me
it's a lot heavier.
Let me attach something to the stigma of it also. There are many people that are not aware. When I released the statistics from the TTPS for the last 2 years for suicide, 246 people. And out of those 246 people, 204 were male. It says something. When you're talking about between 2018 to 2021, that's where it started. It was 320 people committed suicide. 80% of those were male. So from 2018 to now, we've had over the 80 percentile of our suicide victims being male. But what I fail to see is that when we see ministers speak about suicide, they never give the statistic. They never show the vulnerability of the male, which is then pandering to the very bad public social view we have already, that we should not speak of vulnerabilities that men have. Men are entirely vulnerable and they need to see it. When I say that in public and men stop and think, then they realize so many of us killing ourselves, boy. What really going on, boy? We have a problem, boy. But unless we put that out there, people don't notice. They don't even report suicides.
I think from the perspective of TNT being a macho, quote-unquote, island, you dip your head.
Are we a macho island?
Well, I mean, from the passage of history, the male figure has been this dominant figure, this take charge.
Right.
That if it is you moved away from that particular right. image, right. you were thought less of, and you had to bravado yourself even more to right. have a position of power in the country.
But that's the thing, Tosca.
And that's how politics
says, think of it. But
you know,
that's a bad perception
mm-hmm.
because being vulnerable is a level of strength as well.
Correct.
We shouldn't look at it as cowardice. It is strength. Mm-hmm. And we should say those things so people feel emboldened, so to feel it and to think it, mm-hmm. right? So nothing would wrong with a man saying, hey, it's good for me to be strong. It's good for me. I want my sons to be strong. I want my daughters to be strong. I want my sons to be at a certain level of strength as well.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that strength and being strong is being able to express yourself, being able to say, I am feeling good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Mm-hmm. And being able not only to express yourself, but being able to accept when another person or another male tells you that, to actually feel empathetic towards them.
Mm-hmm.
That is part of being strong. That is part of being man. That is part of being... And it is because we don't have these things, as I said, the sensitization. You could never reverse culture, Tosca, unless you infect the society with sensitization.
Mm-hmm.
And people know that in certain things, you know. And they do it. And let me be real. If we're talking about domestic violence and we're talking about putting things towards women and girls, they infect the society with it, which is good because you want to sensitize the society about it. But you cannot sensitize on one end and leave the next side to die.
Yes. Yeah.
You can't do that.
Now, you mentioned life skills and, of course, let me just get the sentence here for you.
Right.
You called for education system that removes the stigma around skill-based and life skills training, as well as succession employment for MILAT graduates within the Ministry of National Security. Now, this has a very focused point towards boys and teenagers.
Correct.
Because you say that's part of the cycle of manhood as well.
Correct.
And if it is that you address it from these early stages, then you believe the suicide rate will indeed drop. Tell us a little bit more of how you see those skills being developed for young men.
Correct. And as I said, it goes straight back into treating with the bad culture and the bad interpretation of things that we've had, the bad perception on things. And I think we've perceived education to be solely academic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a big blunder. As my mother would have said, it's from the pit of hell. So long and short of the story. When you think about it, you may have a child that is exceptionally well academically, but you have a child that is exceptionally gifted with his hands.
Mm-hmm.
If you put the academic genius to do what the child is gifted with his hands to do, he becomes a dunce-head.
Mm.
However, we never lift that child on that side. We never show him his intelligence. We never let him feel that he's educated. I always say education is learning with an intent to execute a purpose. So if you see, and I'll use my nephew as an example. You know, I'm in the automotive industry. I have a nephew that struggled academically. But you tell that boy from since he was 6 years old to strip down a toy car, rebuild it, he will build it for you in seconds. And while he was struggling when he got out of SEA, I told my brother, send him to learn a trade. And he sent him to do straightening and painting. He's one of the best you could find now at the age of 24. It is because you saw where his education lied, where his desire lied, where his gift was present.
His aptitude.
That is what he had the power to perform. So you'll see young boys in that position be called dunceheads because they don't understand. They can't remember the periodic table, or they don't know the equation to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But they may be the best and most gifted in their hands. And it is our responsibility as a state, as I said, first to destigmatize some of these things around these skill-based training, and then put these boys in places to exude and to exhibit their excellence so that they understand that they are excellent as well. Some of the persons that have some of the most gainfully employed persons are persons who are skilled. This building was built by the hands of skilled men. That is the reality of it. And we have to be able, as a nation, as a society, to change the rhetoric. Stop telling Harry, boy, you're going to be dunce and you're going to mix cement for the rest of your life. Harry might come and build your house for you and laugh at you after because he's a big contractor later there on. So we understand the value of academics, reading, writing, arithmetic. So you must be literate in my view. Literacy is important. You understand? But at the end of the day, there are some people that will be naturally gifted in diverse areas. And you, as a state, as a government, or as a leader, must be able to tap into that and must be able to push that throughout your nation and utilize it. Look, we are in a society of hybrid and electric cars now. Yeah?
And I'm thinking, hearing you speak on it as well, the attention towards our education curriculum as it stands to what the modern world is.
Right.
You know, it's not... It doesn't function for the newcomers. It may function for you and I because it was of our generation.
It didn't function for me, to be quite honest. I drop out of that, you know.
Right. But the paying attention, and I wanted to say this as well, the merging of the academics and those who have that proficiency in hand. Because the academics could help with the accounting of the person who is working with their hands.
And let me only call that academic, eh? You see what you're talking about there? You see that entrepreneurial skill and that drive?
Yeah.
That management, financial management is where you call that. Mm-hmm. And you don't even have to have academics to do it. As a businessman, I didn't do business in school.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, I learned it through trial and error. And I believe that's not the way it should. That is why I think I see now so many young entrepreneurs who've done it in that way are now coming back and teaching those life skills.
Networking, yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
So there must be an element of life skill in school. Because at the end of the day, you come out of school, you have all your passes. You don't know what a mortgage is. You don't know what income. You don't know about expenditure. If you do business, you might have heard the words, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many people who have business degrees. And they are horrible at management financially because the life skill is what is missing there. So I think when I was younger, there was a class called homeroom. You see classes like that where you introduce life skills because it's the real world they're going to come out to meet.
Home economics.
You understand? You come out to meet, so you understand what debt look like. You understand what, as I said, financial management is key. And I think part of our problem individually in this country is that we have not been taught financial management skill. I have seen people with incomes as low as $4,000 be able to build themselves capitals and become big investors in time to come.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? You need to ask yourself, what do I need to do it? What do I need to suffer myself from to do it?
Mm-hmm.
I am a businessman who started selling CDs, who didn't have any investor at the age of 16 also. So at the end of the day, it is very possible so to do. And we need the stories from persons like myself, and I try my best to share it. I have many other persons in my industry and other industries who have these stories as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to start putting that into the minds of children, giving them that foresight, giving them that understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So that is education to me.
And in terms of other social issues and social programs, what are some of the programs that you think needs to be targeted or prioritized in this era as we're moving into a new election? I don't want to say new government, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
New space.
I believe I always champion the family council, having it in our community space, the mediator and all these things. But again, I love to see, it doesn't even need to happen in the school, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, that financial literacy brought into the community as well.
Mm-hmm.
Meeting people where they are. What is your budget right now? What is your income? I have done that for personal friends so much. I've done that for my staff. Many members of my staff had a little small business. Some of them don't even work in the office. You understand? So it's about putting that into the communities and elevating some people have some real good skills, baking skills, sewing skills. We have so many skilled persons like tilemen and laborers. Do they earn a good income? Because they pay is 3-something, 4-something, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
But because we have not taught them financial management skill, some of them don't have an ID card. Some of them don't have a passport. Some of them don't have a bank account. How in the world will they become elevated?
Mm-hmm.
How in the world? We don't teach them about debt. We don't teach them about using equity. We don't teach them what equity is. So they will always be plummeted at one aspect and level of their life. So there's a lot of information that has not been disseminated into the community for the community to find the power to enrich itself.
Now, and a person could come and say, well, yeah, the information is there. How is it? Jack could find it, but John didn't know about it. And they live in on the, as to use your words just now, on the quote-unquote same level. What is the difference between Jack and John, where one was more hungry to find the information? How you changed the perspective
and
of the next one?
That is another key point as well.
Yeah.
You understand? John, because John understands his intent or possibly has an experience or possibly has a motivation, John has decided to pursue it. So at the end of the day, it's about changing the mindset so that we have more children like John. We have more youths like John. And it's like creating more positive spaces is where you're going to develop that.
Mm-hmm.
If Jack's experience is only seeing the pusher man having the nice this and having the nice that and perceiving that what he sees is what is true wealth, then Jack will try to see and emulate that. But it's about John may have been introduced or have had interacted with mentors who showed them differently. So it's about getting the information to them at a point in their life where it will impact them.
That will make sense to them.
Yeah, 10, 11, because at that point in time is when the gangman want them, you know. When they had the walkie-talkie and they're talking about, hey, look, the truck, the van passing, and they have blue code, they have whistle, they have all kind of thing. So at that point in time when they are most hungry, when their testosterone now start to burst and they're more excited and they want to do something, is where we must have positive alternatives. We must seek them out. I see they're trying it with Empower and some of these things as well. But we have to go to the areas where we don't think we're going to, because we have to be honest, there are a lot of school dropouts, particularly males. They reach a particular age and they're just done with school and look to go and do hard work. And we have to find ways,
because they want a better life than what they're seeing at home.
Correct.
If they are welcomed at home to begin with.
Correct.
You know.
And the thing is, even if they do that, or the age to do it, or we decide that, hey, from 13, we say it's okay for young boys or teens to become in employment, if ever in time that law is to pass or whatever, once they give consent to it, you still must make that financial literacy available to them. That is what I see with places like Mylat. That is what you need to do. You need, and they need to open back My Path, which was the trade skill aspect of it. Mylat is only academic.
Mm-hmm.
So you want, and that's why I also spoke about Mylat having a immediate successive plan or successive employment into our national security services, mm-hmm. because it is demotivating for those young men who came from areas of struggle to come into this area, get a glimmer of hope, and then they lose it all. Mm-hmm. I will give you all a story. The number one cadet for the last Mylat batch that came out, Mr. Chandri, that everybody spoke about, that was a young man that was given some trouble. He was given some problems, and Sergeant Small from the community police, his mother and mother ended up passing away earlier this year from cancer. At that time, we didn't know she had cancer. She found Sergeant Small because she realized she couldn't be the one to direct him. And she said, I need to do something. Sergeant Small said, hey, we had to try to get him into Mylat. Sergeant Small reached out to me. Mm-hmm. I will be quite honest. I reached out to Honorable Stuart Young at the point in time because the time had passed.
Mm-hmm.
And we got Chandri and another young man in there. Two boys that we were critically concerned about. A Jack and a John, mm-hmm. as you just explained.
Mm-hmm.
Chandri was a Jack. He stayed. He persisted. He fought through and became the top graduate.
Mm.
And the John, just 2 weeks ago or so, he was arrested for a housebreaking in Central. I sent him with everything. I paid everything for him to go. And I still love him at the end of the day. I would still meet him and tell him, I warned you, and this is what happened. He kept, the second week he dropped out, he said, Mr. Fields, it's too hard, boy. The training too hard, boy.
Mm.
And I said, if you stay out here,
it's even harder.
It's harder. Mm. And now he's found himself. Good boy, you know. This is a good boy that we work in the community. Trust me, you know. Found himself in the situation possibly following some friend. And less than 2 weeks ago, he was arrested. So, this is the impact that we had to have. This is the opportunity. And now the top graduate who is the Jack, the John, as you use,
mm-hmm.
he has not progressed into the National Security Services, which is his desire, which is his dream. He excelled, he topped the class. He appeared recently on an interview. Flying the flag for him and his other graduates.
Mm-hmm.
Flying the flag for them, saying that, hey, we're not saying the process is bad. We're glad for the opportunity, but it come like, you give us something and we push us back in the same area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These boys were...
And this is something that I've mentioned over and over again. You can't expect individuals, no matter how old they are, male or female, to put out the effort that you just described.
Hmm.
Make so many sacrifices to get to that point, be it to travel, food, whatever.
Correct.
Right? Put out all of that and say, yes, you're going to make it and this is what you need. Mm-hmm. And then after, everybody just disappears.
Correct.
You know, and there's no follow-up, there's
Correct.
No job.
Correct.
And then you wonder why you think that, you want to describe it as entitlement.
Mm.
It's not that they're entitled that, to that, you promised. And you
made
say,
the effort.
Yes.
They made the effort, they matched your promise with the effort.
Mm-hmm.
You said, if you do this, we'll do that.
So you could understand why many young people, especially those who are listening to this as well and who see it day to day on the streets,
mm-hmm.
I am not going to waste my time getting into a program like that.
Correct.
And because I know of so many who went in and then nothing really come.
Correct. And
how are you
going to
change that narrative for them?
They can do it. And I think even more so through the skills training part. Mm-hmm. If they open My Path. Now, yes, you could say, well, they have a certificate if they come out Mylat. And we can't take everybody into the National Security Services. So they have to try to find jobs elsewhere. Which people who already has been outside having challenges to do right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Give them a skill so they can become self-employed.
Mm-hmm.
Teach them the life skills aspect of it so that they understand the financial management part of it. So when they come out of learning the trade, whether it be laborer, whether it be barber, whether it be what,
mm-hmm.
they set up our official business. They understand cash flows and what a bank will want to see when it comes to revenue, when it comes to income, when it comes to expenditure, how it looks. These are the things you need to put in them in that space of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why I would love to see a Mylat, My Path secondary school. Because one thing they are very good is create an environment for discipline. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
They have taken boys who are considered ill-disciplined or troublesome
and bring the best when it comes to discipline and morality out of them. So if they are able to introduce that in that short space of time, if we start letting them go to the schools from 12 years old with hopes to graduate at 16, I am pretty sure we are going to graduate some very productive, self-employed persons mm-hmm. who at that point will already have their bank account, at that point will have their passport.
This is what vocational schools were, that was their aim long time. What happened to the vocational schools?
I don't
schools?
Know. Somebody either, as sure as somebody discontinued it or somebody didn't carry out the plan the way it
should. It was supposed to be. All right. We've got 5 more minutes to 10 o'clock, to 11 o'clock. Wow, like I want to spend more time here.
Yeah, you run that, man.
5 to 11 here on Freedom 106.5 FM. Let's take a short break. Your calls and messages coming up next. If you have any questions for Mr. Fields, he is willing to answer your questions. And of course, 306-1065. We'll be right back.
Are you ready for the heat, excitement, and music? Get ready to tap into the source for all the latest tea on the Caribbean's top performers. It's Zad right here on CNC3. Stay ahead of the culture and get the behind-the-scenes access you've always wanted with exclusive celebrity interviews, red carpet moments, and new scoops you just can't miss. It's our culture brought to you live and direct. Get ready. It's time for Zad. Only on CNC3, premiering February 4th and airing every Tuesday at 8 p.m.
Tune in to Betterments with Host Space. Monday through Thursday, 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. for a program that educates and is solution-based. Space tackles the issues that matter to you, providing a platform to speak your mind and find solutions. That's Betterments with Space, with a focus on education and resolution. This is all about making things better for you. You can reach us via phone and WhatsApp to share your thoughts and find solutions to the issues that matter to you. So if you want to make a difference and have your voice heard, tune into Freedom 106.5 FM and join us for Betterments with Bass Monday through Thursday from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Better for you, only on Freedom 106.5 FM, where we believe that your voice matters.
This is The Human Impact on Freedom 106.5 FM. Speak your mind.
So welcome back, TNT. Just about 4 minutes to 11 o'clock. And already the question coming in, one of the points that you did bring up within the positioning of the Single Fathers Association of Trinidad and Tobago is to have the discussion on mandatory paternity testing before we get into the whole court battle for maintenance and all of that. Why should that be a priority for you?
I mean, we had to study the consequence of non-payment of child maintenance. To breach that is to be in contempt of an order which sends you to prison. Mm-hmm. It's very hard, and I have stood beside many men who have faced prison time for children that weren't theirs. And even worse than those that were battling or trying to stay out of prison, they were just men who wanted to confirm paternity was theirs. And I've seen men break down to the ground and shattered in pieces to learn that their children were never biologically their own. Mm-hmm. So I am saying that if there is an order to imprison somebody for the non-payment of the upkeep of a child, it is only fair, it is only equitable that we are certain, not that we presume, because there is more laws that presume fatherhood, that confirm fatherhood. So you sign the birth paper, you are presumed the father. Mm-hmm. You are married to the mother, you are presumed the father. The only way you confirm paternity is via DNA testing.
And this would also protect stepfathers as well.
Well, I mean, it would...
How does that...
What I've seen happen, I wouldn't say protect stepfathers, but what happens, I've seen instances... But once a woman has a child with you and you're married to her, that child is yours. Hmm. So there are instances where possibly it may have, I remember, represented our father in this case, in the contrary, where he and the mother had an extra relationship and she was supposed to end it with the father and she didn't end it with the father. And the father didn't know the child was the man's own, but the child was listed as the husband's child.
Right.
So he was not allowed any access to the child because she was married to somebody. Mm-hmm. So the child automatically, presumably, supposed to be his child.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to then apply for a paternity order to prove that the child was really his biological child and not the husband's child.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the danger about presumption of fatherhood via marriage or signing of a birth paper.
Well, the reason why I ask that is if it is that you are in a situation where you know that the child is not yours,
right.
You've been married to the woman,
right.
And for whatever reason there's a separation, but somehow the court or child support for the child that is not yours, even though you already know this,
right.
you are in essence stepfather. How does that?
Correct. It gets ticklish with that part.
Yeah.
It gets ticklish with that part if you have taken on a responsibility
mm-hmm.
for a reason. Let's say, and I guess it's dependent also on if the child's father is alive.
Right.
So if the child's father is alive and they're doing nothing, you at that point in time should have a claim to say, hey, I've done what I did while I was there. But the child has a biological father that can be brought before the court to take care of the child.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm guessing that in instance, if the child's father is dead and you as stepfather has taken up a role as the father during that period of time,
mm-hmm.
then they may hold you responsible to help see about the child.
Let's take some calls. 625-2257, 627-3223, and of course, 306-1065. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Morning, Mr. Oscar. Morning,
good morning, Mr. Princess Fields. Down.
Yes, Mr. Fields, we acknowledge the work that you have been doing for the men of the country and the single fathers and all that. Very good. I wanted to ask you, what is the status with the youth camp? We heard a lot of talk about that years going by and so on, and then I'm not hearing anything. I don't know if they are functioning, how they are functioning, what is happening with that. And secondly, yes, we have to treat with our problems with the fallouts and the negatives and those who would find themselves in confrontation with the law and all that. But Mr. Fields, in our advocacy, I think we need to shift a little more attention to prevention rather than the reactive approach. And if we focus some more on prevention in terms of even going to a school curriculum, in terms of teaching young ones about becoming adolescents and teenagers and everything else that goes with it, when our teenagers leave secondary school and so on, they'll be better prepared to face the challenges of a modern, very competitive and very fierce world that we're in today. They have to be prepared, and we can't depend on the home alone. I don't know if you've ever access to Don Basil Matthews had a concept, a philosophy of education, sport, and religion together in a holistic way. It is a very, very good formula, something we could probably look at to see how we could integrate it into our education system and so on to produce better mothers and fathers. So we have less need and demand for your services. Thank you, Princess Stone.
True.
Thank you so much, Princess Stone.
I totally agree with them. That is not something that we said before. We spoke about education and what we see education as. I also spoke about homeroom, because there was a point that we had those discussions in our classroom.
Let me bring up this point. However, we understand that in the education system,
right.
there are schools that would like to refrain from
right.
teaching
particular things,
sex education right. being one of them.
Right.
So we have to figure out how we get that information to young, both male and female, so that, as Princess Stone says, we nip it in the bud before it even reaches to that point.
Correct.
But we have to also take into consideration the mindsets of religion and those social norms that, you know, that kind, I don't want to say prevents, but gives a form of resistance for their own thinking, being that it is right in their own minds to hold back that information until such a time they feel it fit.
Correct. And that is why I started speaking about, I don't know if he just came on, and I continued speaking about sensitization.
Mm.
You have to have a consensus as a people as into what direction you want to go, right? So that you have a consensus as into how you sensitize your people. Right now, if we are honest, we are very fractioned when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
So someone might have just heard him say the word religion just now, and become disenchanted mm-hmm. and have a different perspective or have a different view. And where I, you know, when I come to say something, I may come from a religious standpoint, but I may say it in a different way. Because all religion, I think, exudes good moral.
Mm-hmm.
So I might say moral because somebody else may accept it while another may not. You understand? And we have to be honest that we have adopted a lot of international so-called best practices and international. And it is because there are no people pounding the streets or were not there pounding the streets to say, hey, we don't want to inherit this. Or, hey, we don't want to take this. We have now become overwhelmed with it. We have now become cultured with it. So proactivity is great for the new generation coming up. But we have to show a level of reactivity for this generation that is bringing up that generation.
Mm-hmm.
Because those people or other people were proactive into resensitizing the way that the society looks at things today.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
And jumping in here, social media has a lot to do with dissemination of that knowledge that you just spoke of.
Of course, of course. That is the most critical place. And people don't watch TV
engine,
again.
The engine at which the fierceness
correct.
And the quickness
correct.
That this information is disseminated. How does that role play in the functioning or the questions that you would like the political parties to address where, in essence, where family life is going to be affected?
I think particularly when it comes to social media, because you're very right, because not everybody who speaks on social media speaks from a place of knowledge
mm-hmm.
or even experience. People are, I mean, they may speak from experience, but their perception of the experience may not be entirely correct. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they would spew the wrong thing. So I think it's important for fact-checking, eh? It may sound foolish, but it may be important. And it's still a very controversial topic at this point in time because I still do not know or think or understand mm-hmm. what we as a society in Trinidad and Tobago, what are we deciding to be and to produce? You see how nice I'm trying to say it, eh?
That is politically correct.
You understand?
We I have appreciate not, that.
We have not come to a decision on that.
Yeah.
Even those who are supposed to be religious, even those who are supposed to have a forefront to say things, don't say it. You might quicker hear me say it. Well, I am no pastoral anybody. I am not a pundit. I am not an imam. I am not anything.
Mm-hmm.
So long and short of the story, we have to have a particular position as a society, our people, and we have to then be able to take it from there. But the youth are confused because you're hearing one thing on one side, you're hearing another thing on the other side. You're going to have plenty of people coming by me mm-hmm. if that is what's going on. Because mm-hmm. you're hearing one person saying family is good.
Mm-hmm.
Family structure is good. One person saying a family don't have to look A, B, C.
Mm-hmm.
That is the truth.
Yeah.
A family could have, you could have two wives, you could have three husbands, you could have. So at the end of the day, you will continue seeing more like me. More people will come to me. Because at the end of the day, you're seeing that, all right, they tried this type of family and it possibly didn't work and everybody separated. It had financial provisions, it had children.
Mm-hmm.
I have the right to just walk away from something. So it's bigger than just saying we had to be proactive. I agree. You had to be proactive. But to be proactive, we had to come to a consensus mm-hmm. as well and make some bold statements who are willing to make it.
I think that's the best line ever. Make some bold statements for those who are willing to
and
make it.
And that is part of leadership. And a leader has to know where you're going to lead your people. And you have to be unapologetic in some regard. But you have to keep the general consensus of the majority of your people at mind. And long and short of the story, you have to be adamant with it if you think or if you see that that is most productive for your society.
Mm-hmm.
People have very, very, very different views. At a particular time, nobody would consider something like abortion.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? I have my views on abortion very strong. You understand? But other people would see them as offensive. Because my body, my right, all these things are coming up. And these are discussions that we do not have openly. So we do not reach consensus on it. Because many of us, particularly those of us who are in leadership position, are in fear of losing the love of the social votes. Media followers.
Yeah. Let's take another call, 625-2257. And this voice note coming in at 306-1065. Good morning and welcome to the discussion.
Sister, good morning. Nice program as usual. What I observe in this country, it has some people don't want to see nothing good for Trinidad and Tobago. And from my perspective, I really like to see that gas deal pull off with Trinidad and Venezuela. And apart from everything, you understand? And shut up the doubters and let PNM come back in power again. Because at the end of the day, I really can't take on that partnership. See, if it's UNC alone, I could understand that. But to see that partnership thing, that they go work. We don't see more going on already from the past and from the present. That they go work, that go a real back canal in it. So I want to see the guys deal pull through, man. And shut up all them doubters and them negative people.
Thank you so much for your opinion, eh? Not Freedom 106.5 FM.
His opinion.
Pardon?
I think Frida have his opinion.
True.
And I mean, that is the thing. I'm not saying no, the economic aspect of things is not important to consider when you're thinking about vote and who you're voting for. Of course, it's critically important. But something that always gets true to the is the human element, the human resource. The natural gas and oil, we always talking about that. I was in a number of committees, even on the post-COVID team, and I had to be pushing the value of the human resource. Mm-hmm. None of those other tourism, natural gas, none of those things will work without a good and efficient human resource. Mm-hmm. Your human resource had to be effective. Their mindset had to be one that is productive. They had to enjoy what they do, not do it with a grudge. Like everybody complaining in licensing and complaining in passport office, them kind of things. So it's mindset, your human resource, that when they have issues in their families, that they have resolve, there are places of resolution that they could go to right within the community. Because if they can't have a happy home, they can't come and work and perform
and be happy,
neither.
Exactly.
So if we continue only to vote based on economic decisions, which I'm saying is critical and important too, at the end of the day, you have to also look at the human element, which is possibly even closer to home at you. If you have a disagreement with your wife or your husband, or if you are a couple before you even have a disagreement and you want to get married, where are the places that I can go to? Does it always have to be a mandir? Does it always have to be a church? Does it always have to be a mosque? Is there any space that we could go to get counsel as a young couple?
That is neutral.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we could understand what we're going to get into as a marriage. If when we now get married, we're having a problem, where can we go before we choose to go to the court to settle it? The court is an adversarial place by nature. So most persons, when they call us, if we realize there's still an opportunity, even though they're separated, we say, hey, you know, there are community. You have the community development centers, any mediation centers. You could go there and see if you all could come to something, an amicable agreement, instead of you going to the court to decide for you. That way is a decision you all make. You are
and
grown
that goes
adults.
On record as well, which may affect both parties.
Correct.
Or the parties involved.
Correct.
In later on when it is you have to
correct.
Do checks
but
and all
I
that.
I agree with the gentleman about being proactive, keeping family together. But we as I say, we had to come to a consensus on a lot of things.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Hello, Jessica, how are you?
I'm good, Port of Spain.
Morning. Rangers, Dragon Gas deal. The man who has the final say to me is Trump. Because I know Trump will speak to Maduro personally. I told you that 1-to-1 man, eh? So that to me, I hope this dragon deal come true. We had leaders who were thinking short term. They never thought medium term or long term. From the government who comes into power, the affiliation will have to start the promise of 1962. It has never been fulfilled. We have to start developing an export-led growth economy. We never had that. Never had that. So the kind of leaders we had, they make themselves rich, they make themselves wealthy, and they go on all kind of meeting and talk as our nonsense, which people don't recognize, and they fix themselves. But we, the people, now remain in the lurch. Some people tell you this country is a rich country and everything honky-dory. Everything honky-dory. Some people have that view. Maybe that is their reality. Is there a thing called our objective reality? Or we have perspectives all over the place. So our leaders failed us. We had said before, we have growth that some folk has a household. They go on holiday in Hawaii every month. They have big 100-inch TV in the house. They have all kind of things. But look where we are today, Tesco. Look where we are today. We, at time, we were the third richest country in the Western Hemisphere. USA, Argentina, and we.
Thanks so much, Border Swain, for your contribution. Now, he brought up one point that I want to ask in your own view of the future, the relations that we have with President Trump and America. Right. Do you see us a little more constrained? I'm trying to find a politically correct way of saying it.
Constrained,
you know?
In the way we do things.
In the way we do things. Do you see that the sanctions that have been U.S. president affecting us regionally, and how would that affect, you know, these social programs, because they were funding a lot as well. How do we recover from that?
I understand that aspect of things. I have looked at the manner in which, first of all, I would say Trump seems to be putting his country first.
Mm-hmm.
And people may say that as a slogan to sound good, but I don't know the economic trials they're in. I know they're in a lot of debt, trillions and trillions of debt. And if he's a businessman first before anything else, mm-hmm. he may be trying to find ways to get that debt down. So if getting that debt down means not sending money to other places while they could use that money to pay off his debt, in his view as a businessman, which may bring in a very little view of the whole social aspect of things, to him is a win and a social benefit to his people.
Mm-hmm.
I think none of us could say no. We demand that our politicians put our views first more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. That's what we ask our politicians to do. So maybe that is what he intends to do for his people. Of course, because we import so much, I'm pretty sure it's going to have some kind of impact if it has to do with tariffs that extend out to our region. Definitely is going to impact us in some way, the removal of some grants. But when I looked at some of the things he removed, even though there were some things from the same organization that was doing well, the fact of the matter is that they were doing bad too in certain things or wasting in certain places. So it is because of the things that were bad, it caused even the things that were good to be
affected. Yeah.
And that's what happens. And that's what you need to do. You need to do. I saw they put out releases of people after 150 years collecting social grants in the U.S. So you know for sure it was fraudulent. You understand? So if you're seeing fraudulent, if you're seeing wastage, if you're seeing these things out of particular programs, it is only automatic. It's going to have, let's say, a ceasefire, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at it, you try to sanitize it, and if it then makes financial sense to them because it is their taxpayers' money,
mm-hmm.
then they make a decision that says, hey, we could give so much at this point in time, but we had to get ourselves out of debt. Yeah. We as our people in Trinidad and Tobago, if it was us, I am pretty sure we'd have wanted to know that our taxpayers' dollars would not be in misrepresented or spent or mishandled or enriching somebody somewhere in a next island or next place that you had never traveled to for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, I see that in that if they are really doing that whole cleanup process and they are finding things that they are making public, most definitely, because even though good things are stopping, I think it is because persons were allowed to do bad also. And that is what we need to introduce here in Trinidad and Tobago. We need to look at all our social grants, all our types of relief that we supply in, and make sure it's not being mishandled. Make sure it's not people who's 200 years getting some disability grant that we don't know about. Have we done that due diligence? Have we done those investigative works within our system?
Mm-hmm.
And that is what we need to ask our leaders. Are we going to do that? Have we done that? Is there anywhere that we could prevent wastage? Are there places that we are sending money to that it should not be in receipt of because it's not relevant? Are there persons on grants that should not be on grants? And these kind of things. Because when you do that, people will make a... So you're trying to stop people grant? No. You're trying to make sure the persons who really need the grant get it. If you don't need a grant and you're receiving funds.
Because there's so many people that would complain and say they're not getting it. It's so hard. It's red tape. It's the lengthy process.
Correct.
And I think in such a modern time that we do exist, the length of time for any process to finish, oh my gosh. You feel like we're in the Stone Ages still.
Correct. Some people just don't go for it. Because you understand? And the goal should be, for me, I always believe that you should try to empower people out of dependency.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of You have purpose-driven short-term grants. And I know they have some seed plan grants and a couple of them that I would make mention of. Mm-hmm. But you make sure that you get people to be able to become independent at some mm-hmm. point, not live forever on a grant unless they are incapacitated or something. Mm-hmm. We have some persons who on disability grants, but they may still have the opportunity to earn a little, to sell a little water, sell a little bread. They are not allowed to do that because they will lose the grant. So we had to look at those things, and that's because they only allow.
I never understood.
And it is because the legislation says that they can't have an income of more than $12,000 for the year. Mm-hmm. So it means that you can't earn, you can't have any other income like that. But at the end of the day, if you could see somebody missing a hand or missing a foot and really needs the grant, but has decided still to mm-hmm. be proactive as he
and productive.
And productive, and mm-hmm. say, I can take an initiative and sell some water, I could still bake bread, I could still do something. You understand? That will contribute to the income. I don't think we should stymie that at all.
You know, this reminds me of a particular video that was circulating some time ago of a handicapped individual, but he was in construction.
Right.
I don't know if it's one of those countries like Sri Lanka or Pakistan.
Yeah, I see.
Right?
It. I
and
see it.
And he's working harder than some able-bodied people out here.
Correct.
So what would you tell him if there was one who wanted to apply himself or herself in such a way, say, listen, my disability does not define me. And there's so many speeches like that, you know, surrounding abilities. I don't like to call it disabilities, but abilities that make you different and you want to be, you know, part of society and all of that, but yet still you're trying to...
I think it should be encouraged. I mean, because the disability grant isn't a great magnitude of money. I think it's what, like about... a little short of $2,000.
And what does that do? That can't pay.
Correct. So I mean you could encourage or even ask them to use that as an incentive to find something else to do.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? To help and bring in a better income for themselves, and I mean to keep them active as well. Opposed to just telling them, hey, for you to get this grant, stay home and do nothing.
Yeah, that brings
bringing the wrong mindset, right?
Self-esteem, mental correct. Health, everything correct. Going in a
going,
different direction.
Going reverse, and they're doing this just to get the grant.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Oscar again and Mr. Fields. I have to call back here, Princess Tong.
Good morning.
This situation with the disabled community is a grave injustice. It is inhumane. And it speaks to the thinking, the mental attitude of some of our leaders and persons in authority and in the various agencies and systems and so on.
True.
The fact of the matter is, Mr. Fields and Mr. Oster, listeners, that the resources of any state belongs to the people, and persons who are disabled are equally entitled to those resources to be distributed in an equitable and just manner. And if it is the state has to bend or shift a little bit, whatever, to accommodate disabled persons.
Correct.
It is not a favor. That is their human right.
I agree with
and
that.
To talk about giving somebody $2,000 a month and you cannot earn more than $12,000 if you do it selling water by the road or some polori or nuts or something, whatever, you in real stress. When that program should have been have a level of flexibility in it where that you could go on to the office and listen, I got a 6-month training program with a company or something. They could
agreed.
Probably put your disability grant on a hold, whatever, and you go there and do what you have to do. And if it worked out properly, you could extend and all. They should have an apprenticeship program with the private sector that encourages businesses and so on to employ persons
agreed.
With disability. And so on, and give them that opportunity.
See, there we go. Yeah.
I totally agree. Even some advanced
so
studies
has to
as well.
Be corrected, and allow me to see the Minister Cox is talking about legislation coming for the disabled. Well, we are waiting with bated breath.
Yes, ma'am.
Because that is going to be a real freedom and a real opportunity and a new era for persons with disabilities in Trinidad and Tobago.
I'm glad
so, Mr.
Field,
thank you again.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. You're welcome, sir. I love the points.
Thank you.
I love the points that you're bringing.
Yeah, I attended the World Down Syndrome Day conference that happened at the Hyatt on Friday, and they did mention that they would be looking into legislation that would make individuals who are disabled in that space more equitable to education, more equitable to employment, more equitable to services, social services, and so on, where they are integrated into workspaces as well. And there was one young lady who spoke about her employment with Scotiabank. And she's being a person who greets you as you're coming. And she was all excited and felt, you know, and she felt that, you know, it was a way in which she finally felt appreciated and part of society.
Of course, I remember, I mean, and these things, I've learned this bits of the laws and these things because personal experiences have come to me.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this was our father in Claxton Bay who had one leg and just trying to sell some mangoes to send his daughter to school. And he became at risk to lose the disability grant, lose the public assistance for because he was selling mangoes. I had to intervene.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
I think these, obviously, from those experiences that you're talking about, you have to pay attention case by case.
Correct.
Because what may apply for one person doesn't necessarily mean it will apply for another. And this is why I wonder why we don't have more social workers. I've always been advocating for that understanding where the social system...
Well, many of them graduated, but they ain't getting employed. They will tell you that. So that is the next problem that we have. We have a number, the amount of social workers, or not social workers, persons who have their degrees that continue to say, Mr. Fields, you know how long we are applying, we can't apply. And it will never happen if everything we only consider as important is dealing with natural gas and dealing with all these other things, which I am saying is important. But until we see the value in the investment in the human resource, to places like National Family Services are grossly understaffed, grossly under-resourced, and they are supposed to be the number one ambit of the Ministry of Social Development when it comes to dealing with these kind of issues in the home, with counsel, with suicide, with separation, with marriage counsel at the end of the day. So, I mean, if we don't strengthen these resources that we're supposed to have, both the proactive and reactive side of it, we will always be in the social squalor that we are in. We are socially in a social squalor. And that is because we have abandoned social things. We ourselves don't see it as important. You understand? To make demands for it. And I will tell people today, this is your opportunity to do something. Doing what we've done at the Fathers Association for the last decade and a half is not something any human being, I for sure cannot continue too long, you know. So this is your opportunity to make a stand and representation for yourself. Because if you let this opportunity pass you by, it is challenging for me to come and advocate again for another 15 years. When you have the opportunity to say, if we go back to where we talk about the issues pertaining to men, when it comes to homelessness, the Ministry of Social Development released the statistics that 94% of our homeless in Trinidad and Tobago are male. But we don't have a male shelter. We don't have a shelter for minor males between 11 and 17. So if they leave a home of abuse with their mother, they cannot enter into the female shelter with her. You know how many times they call me? The police call in our organization to see if we does get any funding. We don't get funding to house anybody.
So this might be a very naive question. What about places like Rebirth House? And is it that it is strictly for addicts and...
Correct. What you will find for me is drug rehabilitation centers. Shamrock Center is our next center as well, but you will hear most of it is drug rehabilitation. You understand? But I'm talking about a place, not a place that, and I don't even like to call it shelter. If you realize in my recommendation, I put sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
You want it to be a place of empowerment.
Words can have a very mental effect on things.
Of course. You want it to be a place that when they go there, if you have to put a skill inside of them, if you have to help them become employed, if you have to take them out of something else. Mm-hmm. Drug addiction isn't the only problem that men suffer from.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? And we have to take stock of that. That is not the only reason men are in the street because they are drug addicts. That men on the street because they just have no money to go nowhere else. Some of them were put out of their house at that particular... Some of them have even aged out of orphanages at the age of 18 and found nowhere to go.
That is another epidemic that, yes. I mean, it happens. You see, it is noted because it is highlighted so many times in television shows and so on that you know about the American procedure. Mm-hmm. When they age out, they have nowhere to go and their male shelters and female shelters. Mm-hmm. And then you say, so why we don't have that here? We just want to adopt the wrong thing sometimes.
We could develop our own.
And we could develop looking at the model that exists out there. We always talking about, we always looking to America, mm-hmm. but there lies the reason why.
Correct. I don't
and
know.
And not only that, because they've advanced in terms of you know, how to work these things out, these social issues, because of how long they've been around. But I digress. All of the things that we can adopt and adapt to us, we don't seem to do this.
Around longer than America, there are better policies in the eastern side of the world that we don't follow. We follow America.
Oh, but that's a whole different conversation altogether.
We follow America because America is more willing to lend money out or give money out. And this is exactly what Trump is cleaning up now. So maybe now, as money is being retracted, we may start to think for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So, long and short of the story, that is why a culture is created somewhere. There's somebody that finalization and boom, sends it across the region. Mm-hmm. And we inherit the culture together with the money.
Well, Mr. Fields, it's 11:30. I know this conversation could go on for another half hour.
I could talk for long.
Listen, and it's not that it's a boring conversation. It's a needed conversation.
Of course.
Because there are a lot of things that, obviously, within the space and time that we're in now, we have to recognize and prioritize so that we don't repeat silly mistakes.
Correct.
Let's take another call quickly before we close off. Hello, good morning.
Pleasant good morning, Ms. Tosca. Pleasant good morning to Mr. Wendell Fields.
Morning, brother.
Morales here, Mr. Morales here. I met you 1 or 2, 3 times, but I know you don't meet plenty of people. So I'm a personal regular caller to the program. I always try to contribute to national development and so on. And I know, you know, your mantra and what you're doing is that men really in a crisis in the society at all levels.
Yeah.
And I know another thing we got to do is see men, we need to kind of like teach young boys from school how to handle relationships, how to handle finance. As you were saying, you know, in the olden days when we were small, daddy penny bank. I know these people didn't know such a big degree and things, our parents of those days, but that was actually training the mind and training the individual how to save money and then put aside money. Okay. It was no big technical way, but it was a training. So, you know, as we move forward our country, these are the developments we need to instill in the young children, because that people with 4 or 5 degrees. And they win about 5 bank, they have about 5 or 6 credit cards, they win all. And they're working for 10, 20 thousand. But just what you were saying just now, money management. If you want to train to manage money, definitely, it's all come out of magic. All them sort of degree study and training that teacher. So may God continue to give you and all of us the health and strength to continue to make it a better place, man. Have a blessed day, Mr. Fields. Bye.
I appreciate it.
All right, let's squeeze in one more. Hello, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Tosca, and your guest. Mr. Fields,
thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, hello, you hear me, right?
Loud and clear, yes, loud.
Okay. Yes, okay, the two quick points. The last one, which I think is more important, is that just as how they're taking out health charge, I mean, people will say it's not the time to do it or what, but believe me, it will tell when you grow up age and you need it. They should take out I don't know, the fee could be $10 or $15 or $20 from everyone who is on a PYE and put it to a special fund, not into the consolidation fund because you're going to go into loss there. Put it to a special fund and have a committee to overlook that fund. Secondly, the part about Mr. Fields with the 12,000 gap on pensioners and so on. You know, if you get an NIS, and old age pension, you don't get more than 550, right? You're losing 500 every month, right? Because of this avenue. I don't know, how come nobody never increased this gap? Everybody increasing their salary in government, but they can't increase at least that gap. Let's know, fair take comment.
Thank you so much for your call.
I mean, that's it, you know what I mean? People are, and this is why I encourage people to do, boy. It might sound strange, but become an advocate of your cause. Let me tell you why. I, by nature, I'm a businessman. I'm a car salesman. That is what I was, you know. It's a situation of some system that tried to remove my son from me. Is what put me in this sphere, you know. Is that is the love that I had for him. So I think it's time as our people to understand sometimes the individual circumstance, or even if not your individual circumstance, the circumstance in your neighborhood, your community, your nation, and look at more when you're looking, demand more when you're ready to vote. You understand? It just can't be, well, hey, this is my, I don't like you, so because I don't like you, I go vote for you.
Yeah.
90% of that is what, I don't want them coming power, you know, so to keep them out of power, I'm going to vote this one. At the end of the day, we have to, as our people, ask, how is this going to enrich my life? We're not going to live forever. We are all going to close our eyes at some point in time. So how are you going to enrich my life? How are you going to enrich my offspring's life in the next 5 years? Both of my sons could vote. In that space of time, what are you going to do? You understand? And if I am to look from the last election to now putting into issues of fatherhood, even from before that when the other government was in power as well, for the last decade and a half, we've been advocating for these same things here and nothing has changed. So it said to me things like parental alienation that we said they should stop. And we used Selvon Rea's situation as a situation when his two children, their throat was slit and the mother's own also. Nobody did anything. And that is why we could see Amaya's head lost too last year, because they didn't listen to the last 15 years. So these are things we must say and we must continue to demand. And that is why I said this election, I must make sure after these 15 years of advocacy that we must pay attention to these things that are not going to only enrich the lives of men and boys, but their families also, women and girls too.
Okay, so before we do close off, there's one important question that I wanted to ask, and just remember that I need to ask. From the perspective of what the Single Fathers Association of Trinidad and Tobago would need from women,
right,
what would be the most important thing you need?
Their support. Every man has a mother. If I tell you, and I want to tell some of the young ladies out there who don't like me too much, I've been doing this about 15 years now. And if I am to count the number of women who didn't like me 15 years ago, whose sons were 10 then, whose sons were 15 then, and they are now 25 and 30, and they are now recipient of the very same thing we've been trying to change, and they can't get to see their grandchild, and they can't get access, or they've seen the sons being imprisoned for children that aren't theirs. They now are my greatest supporters. Those who hated me before, a woman came to me directly, said, Mr. Fields, I hated you because you represented his father. She forgot she had a son. And what was happening to the father could have happened to the son. Now she's a grandmother who has zero access to her grandchildren. So I want women to remember that. I want you to understand that. When you see we're fighting for rights, even for boys, you have a son. You must also be advocate as well for him, as much as you're an advocate for girls. And that is it. We forget boys. We forget that they're vulnerable too. We forget they're susceptible to all the things, sexual assault, all these things. There are big women that sexually assault young boys. And we have cultured young boys to believe that a sexual assault from a woman is actually a sign of machismo, that they are greater and more experienced sexually. Whereas in the vice versa, we let young girls know that if an adult man has sexual intercourse with you, he has assaulted you. Some mothers they say, boy, I am a cock inside of the yard here. All the big women and all want him.
Narrative.
And then they will say, I don't like women. Which part? You could never play a clip in 15 years that says that Rundle Fields dislikes women. I don't stand for stupidness. But at the end of the day, you will never find a clip. Is a single mother raised me?
Mr. Fields, thank you so much for joining me today. It has been a very intense and interesting conversation for the last hour. TNT, any other questions, you can send them to 3061065. And if you missed out on any part of the conversation, you can find it inside the podcast on our Facebook page and, of course, our Instagram page. Mr. Fields, thank you.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.